The House Tax Committee will now come to order. This is a bill that has generated a lot of interest on both sides. We're going to try and make sure that everybody gets heard, so we're going to get started. And Representative Lencheski, would you like to move your bill?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to move House File 91 for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill.
Thank you. Representative Lencheski moves her bill, and with that, would you like to brief us on what you're proposing?
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, members, and I will quickly just mention the mechanics of the various taxes in the bill and then just speak to it for a minute, and then we can just hear from both sides on the issue. So I need my glasses to do this, so members, just for the tape here, really, just to cover the highlights, and you all have the information. What House File 91 does is it increases the cigarette excise tax by $1.60 a pack, would begin in July of this year. This increase is net of the repeal of the health impact fee. A floor stocks tax would be imposed so that existing inventory of distributors and retailers on the 1st of July would also pay the tax. The bill also provides for an adjustment of the in-lieu sales tax on July 1st to account for the price effects of the excise tax increase and the repeal of the health impact fee. Additionally, the bill, like I said, increases the tobacco products tax from 70% of the wholesale price to 95% of the wholesale price. That would also start in July. This increase is net of the repeal of the health impact fee, and that is the combined effect of the health impact fee and the excise tax under present law, which is 70%. Again, the bill repeals the health impact fee. It imposes a minimum tax on each container of moist snuff equal to the excise tax on a pack of 20 cigarettes. And this minimum tax applies only if it's higher than the regular 95% excise tax. An additional provision, and I think we'll hear more about this in another bill, it provides that little cigars will be taxed as cigarettes rather than they are currently as other tobacco products. It indexes the excise tax rate on cigarettes for future increases in the average retail price, and that will start in 2014. And it provides that the in-lieu sales tax rate on cigarettes will also be calculated to include the legacy sales tax rate. So if I may, members, just to point out, we found out that the revenue estimate for the bill is actually with the Representative Loon's bill in the folder. So you have to get the right revenue estimate out. And I think that's what people are going to care about. So we should just, you know, I just want to say it straight up that the total provisions of the bill in the next biennium would raise $441 million. So with everything that's going on, that gives you a size of the magnitude of the tax increase going on for the various tobacco taxes within this bill. And so if I may, Madam Chair, I just want to speak, you know, in concept to the bill. You know, obviously that a number of us have supported the need to raise the tax on this product for a long time. And indeed, it's been bipartisan over the years as different governors and legislators have supported this as something Minnesota should do. So there certainly is a revenue component, and that's why we're here at the Tax Committee. So no doubt this is a tax increase on tobacco products, and that's one component to the bill. But the, I think, much more serious component to the bill is the public health impact of what tobacco products cost the state government. And I think we know that all non-smokers pay higher taxes when folks who use tobacco do not pay the amount of cost to the healthcare system, and that's certainly not happening. So there's another big public health component, and that is that the one thing that potential new smokers are the most sensitive to, there's certainly education and prevention and peer pressure, but the data shows again and again, the thing that potential new smokers are the most sensitive to is the price. And part of that price is the tax. Additionally, younger potential smokers and new smokers are the most price sensitive folks in the smoking population, and they're the most likely to quit if the price gets high. So we're actually significantly behind Wisconsin right now. This bill would put us ahead of Wisconsin, and I will tell you all honestly, I wanted to raise it even higher, but I was convinced by the nonpartisan revenue folks that I'd hit that point of inelasticity, where what we'd really do is start just punishing people who have no real chance of quitting. So I wanted to get it as high as I could to get the best health outcome for Minnesota. And I originally was looking at $1.75, and I was convinced by others that that was probably too high. I think, you know, the governor's at 98 cents, this is $1.60, and then a number of other provisions I raised. So with that, Madam Chair, I think that covers, you know, the big pieces of the bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Lencheski. Because we have a lot of testifiers, what I'd like to do is go right into testimony so that we can hear people who've come from throughout the state to talk about this. And if members can just note your questions, we'll take those at the end. Welcome to the committee, Ms. Molinen.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair and members. My name is Molly Moylanen, and I'm with Clearway, Minnesota. Our mission is to reduce the harm that tobacco causes the people of Minnesota. Today, it's my pleasure to kick off the testimony in support of Chair Lencheski's bill on the behalf of Raise It for Health. Take a minute right now to review the list of over 30 organizations on the back of our fact sheet, the list of 30 organizations that have come together in coalition to reduce smoking in Minnesota by increasing the price of tobacco. Our coalition is a mix of leading health and nonprofit organizations, health plans, hospitals, voluntary organizations, business, labor unions, and local governments. We share a common mission to increase the price of tobacco because it is the best tool we have to help smokers quit and to prevent kids from ever starting. According to leading national public health experts, the proven formula for reducing smoking is really threefold: strong smoke-free policies, prevention and cessation services, and high tobacco prices. Thanks to many of you, Minnesota has a strong statewide smoke-free law. In fact, we just celebrated the five-year anniversary of the Freedom to Breathe Act this October. Minnesotans also provide smokers with cessation services. Uninsured Minnesotans have access to stop smoking services like counseling and medication through Quit Plan services, and it doesn't cost the state a penny. But when it comes to the third key ingredient, tobacco prices, Minnesota can do better. Don't be fooled. Tobacco is still a big problem here in Minnesota. After decades of sharp declines, our progress to reduce smoking has slowed. 77,000 Minnesota kids will use tobacco this year. And the toll of death and disease due to tobacco is startling, especially for low-income Minnesotans and minorities. For example, African Americans are 30 to 40% more likely to die from lung cancer than their white counterparts. This is not right. There are ways to break the cycle of addiction. And here in Minnesota, we've been doing work to determine what they are. Last year, Clearway Minnesota partnered with an economist from Georgetown University. He developed a model to determine the effectiveness of tobacco control programs and policies on smoking rates. The study found that the price of tobacco was the largest contributing factor in reducing smoking rates. Prevention programs, smoke-free laws, cessation services, youth access, counter-marketing campaigns, those were all also important, but price is king when it comes to driving down smoking. Today you'll hear from researchers and doctors, business leaders, youth advocates, and community leaders. They will share their data, their stories, and demonstrate the devastation that goes hand in hand with tobacco addiction. And they'll shine a light on the real benefits of increasing tobacco taxes. Now you'll also hear from opponents. They will do anything to distract you from a fact that they already know: tobacco taxes will reduce use. Opponents will argue that increasing taxes will lead to rampant smuggling, that
Madam Chair,
business,
Madam Chair.
And that the revenue isn't
Excuse
stable.
Me a minute.
Madam Chair.
Representative David.
Could we let the opponents give their testimony and not the folks that are supporting the bill? We will hear from the opponents. I don't think we need to hear what the opponents are going to say. We'll wait till we hear it.
Representative Davids, your point is well made, but I think they're just trying to respond to counter arguments, and maybe that you can make your points in another way. Thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll just say that these arguments don't hold a candle to the health benefits of increasing the tobacco tax. Now, I know many people find tobacco taxes regressive, and let me speak to that point for one moment. Keeping the tobacco prices low to protect people is wrong. Cheap tobacco is not a gift to low-income communities or communities of color with higher smoking rates. Take a look again at the great coalition members we have here today. Many of our organizations are dedicated to serving and working with Minnesotans who are most vulnerable. And studies show that lower-income Minnesotans are the most likely to quit or cut back when prices go up. The fact that increasing the tax on cigarettes will prevent thousands of Minnesota kids from becoming addicted. Now, the choice is clear: protect kids or tobacco industry profits. We want to thank Chair Lincheski, the governor, and many of you for introducing and supporting legislation to increase the price of tobacco this year. The public is with you. A majority of Minnesotans support increasing the tax on cigarettes by at least $1.50 per pack. The coalition stands ready to do what we can to make sure a tobacco tax increase is in the final budget package this year to help smokers quit and prevent our youth from ever starting. Thank you.
Thank you. And our next witness is for the proponents is Dr. Courtney Jordan Bakler. I'm pronouncing that correctly?
Beckler.
Thank you. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Dr. Courtney Jordan Beckler. I'm a cardiologist and the vice president of the Penny George Institute for Health and Healing. I'm also the chair of prevention and wellness with Allina Health. I'm here as a volunteer with the American Heart Association. I'm here to testify on behalf of the American Heart Association in support of House File 91. As a cardiologist, I can tell you firsthand the devastation that tobacco has on the body. I want to give you a snapshot of how tobacco use develops and why it's so important to prevent young people like my children from ever beginning. Today in Minnesota, there are 53,000 high school students who smoke daily. This year, 77,000 Minnesota kids will try tobacco. We know that if kids never begin smoking as youth, the chances are low that they'll ever pick up the habit once they become adults. However, nearly 90% of all adult smokers begin smoking while in their teens or earlier, and two-thirds become regular smokers before they reach age 19. Overall, roughly one-third of all kids who become regular smokers before adulthood will eventually die from smoking. In Minnesota, that means that over 17,000 of those 53,000 kids who are now smoking will die from smoking. 5,100 Minnesotans die each year from tobacco-related illnesses. In fact, tobacco kills more Minnesotans than alcohol, homicides, car accidents, AIDS, illegal drugs, and suicide combined. The statistics are grim for those who fall into tobacco addiction traps. But the real stories of my patients I see every day are even more heartbreaking. As a cardiologist, there's not a day that goes by that I don't see the impact of smoking on my patients. Just yesterday, Carol, a 73-year-old woman who I see routinely for the blockages in her legs, heart, and neck from smoking came in. She's quite a weak woman who travels with her oxygen tank and gets quite short of breath just walking into my office. I was telling her about going to the Capitol today to try to make sure people never start smoking in the first place. She mentioned to me that when she was a young girl, people didn't know better. She'd do anything to quit now. What she finds so sad is that young people who know the horrible consequences are marketed so poorly that they start to smoke. I asked her if she could tell you anything what it would be, and she said to me, Dr. Beckler, the best thing we could do is to stop people from ever starting. I wouldn't wish the way smoking has impacted my life on anyone. I can't chase my grandkids around the park. I'm in and out of hospitals, and routinely my medications increase, all because of smoking. The most important thing we can do as adults and you as lawmakers is to make sure that tobacco products are as difficult as possible for our children, my children, to get their hands on. One way to do this is to significantly increase the price of tobacco. I urge you to increase the price of tobacco in Minnesota and think about the 17,000 sons, daughters, nieces, nephews, neighbors, the kids that you know and love who will lose their lives prematurely to tobacco use if we do nothing. This bill will ensure that I will deliver less bad news to my patients, that I will be able to tell more family members that their loved one has a real chance of recovery. Every time I walk into my office and can deliver good news instead of bad news to my patients, that's a win for all of us. Increasing the price of tobacco will save many lives, and it will prevent me from having to deliver bad news time and time again. I urge you to support House File 91, and I thank Representative Lincheski for introducing this important legislation. I thank you for your time today.
Thank you, Dr. Becknell. The next we have Dr. Peter Donnell, and as members are holding their questions, if witnesses can stay, they might have targeted questions to you, I'm told. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee for this opportunity to testify this afternoon. My name is Dr. Peter Donnell. I am a medical director at Blue Cross and Blue Shield of Minnesota. I am the immediate past president of the Twin Cities Medical Society, and I've also been a practicing pediatrician for well over 20 years at this point. And thank you for this opportunity to speak in support of House File 91. Even though this is a tax committee, you can actually have a huge impact on the health of Minnesotans by your support of this bill. So please consider that as you're going forward. It is a simple fact. Tobacco continues to play a big part in causing significant social and economic injury to our state. Each year, more than 5,100 Minnesotans lose their lives to tobacco-related illnesses. This is both tragic but also preventable. In addition to the larger amount of personal suffering, there's also a real dollar cost to the state of Minnesota. The health-related costs associated with tobacco are really staggering. Roughly $3 billion with a B dollars each year are related to health care costs in Minnesota, and these are excess costs that we don't have to spend if we didn't have as much injury from tobacco. In order to reduce those dollars spent on tobacco-related injuries, we really need to reduce the use of tobacco. There's no other way to do this. Raising the cost of purchasing tobacco is the single most effective way to ensure that this is going to happen. In fact, there probably isn't a public health opportunity supported by more research or experts in the field. Countless economic and public health experts have all come to the same conclusion. Higher costs do lead, more than anything else, to deter teenagers from starting the use of tobacco, and it also helps to increase the number of current smokers who end up quitting within a short period of time. And most importantly, we know that it works here right in Minnesota. In 2005, the last time that the legislature took action to raise the price of tobacco, calls to Blue Cross's Stop Smoking line increased by 65% in the first month alone. These results demonstrate the strong and almost immediate impact that price increases can have on helping people beat a very powerful addiction. They are also a good reminder of how effective the last price increase was in improving the health of all Minnesotans. I honestly can't recall any other individual measure that has been as successful in reducing tobacco use rates in Minnesota. But in spite of all this success, I still have a lot of concerns. I am very troubled by the fact that there are still 625,000 people in Minnesota who are currently using tobacco products, and I'm also even more troubled as a pediatrician by the 77,000 children and teens who will use tobacco for the first time in this year ahead. As a pediatrician, my wish is that each of my patients will live a long, happy, and healthy life. But I'm also realistic in this. Some of my patients will lose a parent or grandparent far too early, thanks to their use of tobacco. And then also, as Dr. Beckler pointed out, many others will have years of their own life stolen away by the use of tobacco. As the tax committee, you have an opportunity to make a difference in this very important health issue. By supporting a significant tobacco tax increase, you will help to save more than 47,000 Minnesota teens from becoming addicted adults. You will also help to save more than $1.65 billion in long-term health care costs in this state alone. And most importantly, you will help to save lives. So please, there really isn't any other choice to help save lives. We really can't afford not to pass this kind of legislation. So thank you very much for this opportunity, and good luck in your deliberations.
Thank you, Dr. Danelle. And next we have Mike Brommelkamp. And as he's coming up, as witnesses are listening, if you can not repeat comments that have already, or statistics that have already been made, that'll help us move to making sure everyone gets heard. Thank you. Please begin and introduce yourself.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to testify and be in support of House File 91. My name is Mike Brommelkamp. I'm a principal with Olson Thielen CPAs here in the Twin Cities, also a partner with Business Consulting Group, Ebita Partners, and president of the Minnesota Business Valuation Group. I've been quite involved with the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce for many years, both as a board member and particularly in healthcare policy development. I'm also a member of a number of local chambers and community economic development organizations. I'm here today to talk about the impact of tobacco taxes on the business community. My testimony will be short but impactful. Tobacco use places a huge financial burden on the state and its businesses. Here are some simple facts. $2.87 billion a year in Minnesota are spent on health care costs that are directly related to smoking. That is a big number. Health care costs are 34% higher for smokers, and you can debate the different studies that are done, but that is a significant number. On the averages, an employee who smokes costs his or her employer $3,391 every year in health care, missed work, and lower productivity. As somebody who works with a lot of small businesses in the state, that is a significant number. And all told, smoking creates $1.2 billion in additional incremental costs to our Minnesota employers every year. That is a big number. This is simply unacceptable. The burden on our economy in Minnesota is just staggering, and we do have the ability to show these losses through one simple act, and if we can, we should do it. An increase on the scale proposed would provide savings of $1.65 billion over time in the state of Minnesota. And I believe that this proposal is good for business, it's good for the health of our citizens, and it's good for our state overall. I'm urging you to support this proposal, and thank you for your time.
Thank you for your testimony. Next, we have Dr. Thomas Kottke.
Chair Loeffler, members of the committee. My name is Thomas Kottke. I'm a cardiologist serving Health Partners patients. I'm a medical director at Health Partners Health Plan. For 40 years, I've been active in the community and internationally in efforts to reduce the burden of tobacco. Thank you for allowing me to speak in support of House File 91. There's overwhelming evidence showing that tobacco price increases prevent youth initiation, persuade existing smokers to quit or cut back, and improve individuals' health and lower health care costs. Millions of Minnesotans would benefit if you pass this legislation. If you don't, there's only one entity that will benefit, and that's the tobacco industry. The industry never gives up. 25 years ago, I wrote a chapter for the now extinct Encyclopedia Britannica on tobacco. This battle has been going on for 400 years, and it will continue to go on. You'll need to do something. Records from Minnesota's historic lawsuit against tobacco in the 1990s revealed that the industry has knowingly produced a product that is lethal for half of the people who use it. They manipulated the design to make it more addictive, and despite the dangers, they continue to market. And they market in places that you or I normally don't see. They use coupon strategies. They have cigarettes in movies, TV shows, video games, and the internet. They give money to worthy causes, even send lobbyists here to the Capitol trying to influence or prevent good policies like this. But we do have an opportunity here. Price increases are the number one deterrent to smoking. When I see patients tomorrow, like Dr. Betzler, I'll be seeing individuals whose lives have been derailed by the tobacco industry. Defenders of cheap tobacco will tell you that a tobacco tax is regressive, but it is the disease caused by the tobacco that is really regressive. Those with fewer resources have poorer health insurance, poorer sick leave, poorer disability insurance, and all of this means that illness from tobacco hits them much harder than it would hit you or me if we use tobacco. The choice should be obvious, and I'm asking you to please side with health, side with Minnesota, side with our kids. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Dr. Kottke. Kayla Narum is our next witness. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committees, members of the committee. My name is Kayla Narum. I'm from Andover, Minnesota, and a senior at the University of Minnesota, majoring in marketing and entrepreneurial management. I volunteer with Colleges Against Cancer, Relay for Life of Maple Grove, and the American Cancer Society Cancer Action Network. I don't smoke, and I'm here to tell you why and encourage you to act so that other kids make the same choice. The past 7 years of my life have revolved around the effects of cancer, as I lost my father to esophageal cancer a week after my 14th birthday. Yes, he was a smoker, but he was more than that, too. He was my dad, and not the guy that would ever want to ask for help. He could fix anything on his own. When he started having difficulty swallowing and pain in his throat and his stomach, we knew something wasn't right. He went to see a doctor and was admitted to the hospital and diagnosed with esophageal cancer. I thought my dad could never be that sick. He was invincible in my young eyes. The next few months, Dad was getting more and more sick from the chemo, but he was still at every sporting event and the best dad he could be. One day, he was feeling sick and went to the hospital. The next thing I remember, he's in the ICU, in a coma, and I'm being told there's nothing left that the doctors can do. He was in hospice care for 2 months before he finally passed away on February 25th, 2006, a week before his 40th birthday. I only got to know my dad for a short 14 years, but in that time, he shaped the person I have become today. He wasn't there when I graduated from high school. He wasn't there to intimidate my first boyfriend, and I won't get a father-daughter dance at my wedding. I've learned to be okay with that because my dad was there for those short 10 years, and that in itself was a blessing. Today I am testifying to remember my dad, to let his memory live on, and in, hopefully in some small way being a part of making sure that no child, parent, sibling, or friend ever has to go through what me, my family, and my dad went through. You're not the first lawmakers to have to address the issues of tobacco, and you likely won't be the last. I want to make sure you understand the historic importance of this legislation, its life-saving potential, and the devastating consequences of doing nothing. The American Cancer Society Cancer Action Network is well known for standing up to the tobacco industry and its positions driven by evidence and science. Long before I was born, two doctors, researchers for the American Cancer Society, and lifelong smokers decided to look into what was then described as the possible but doubtful connection between smoking and lung cancer. The two doctors found that indeed smoking was the cause of cancer death. After that, they quit smoking. Despite all the evidence, the tobacco industry comes back with lies and more lies, targeting replacement smokers, also known as my friends and me. Youth, students, kids like me are price sensitive. When the price of something is increased dramatically, we can't afford to buy it. Simple, right? Many lawmakers have had to sit where you are right now, faced with taking the tobacco industry, their lies, and their money. You have a choice to make. Do you, faced with the facts, choose to protect Minnesota kids or the tobacco industry? This fight is far from over. We need to do whatever we can to protect kids, families, and communities from the harms of tobacco. Please support House File 91.
Thank you, Ms. Narum, for your poised testimony. Ginny Johnson is next.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Ginny Johnson, and with me are Jonathan Rose and Gloria Kazanakli. Last fall, we joined with 44 other community members to see what could be done about the health disparities resulting from commercial tobacco use. With Minnesota preparing to set its next two-year budget, we saw an opportunity to join with others and do something to lessen this burden in our communities. 44 of us signed a letter to Governor Dayton in support of a commercial tobacco tax increase. And we are here today to express our concern about our community's health and to ask you to increase the price of commercial tobacco. And I have copies of the letter to Governor Dayton here for members. We aren't here alone. In fact, we represent a group of individuals from the targeted communities. And I say targeted communities because the African and African American, American Indian, Asian American and Pacific Islander, Chicano Latino, and lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and queer communities are targeted by the tobacco industries. The tobacco companies are proactive in their targeting and their advertising toward these communities, and their marketing is designed to resonate with specific demographics. For example, in my community, tobacco companies have sponsored Asian American Pacific Islander festivals, offering promotional items in our languages. Now, this is not by chance. The tobacco industry researches our cultures and tailors their marketing to match. They know that smoking among women is uncommon in many Southeast Asian countries, and they encourage these women to start smoking when they arrive here as immigrants. Some communities smoke at much higher rates than the general population. The smoking rate among the Vietnamese community in Minnesota is 22%, and 31% of men among Cambodian, Lao, and Vietnamese communities smoke. It's no surprise that lung cancer is the leading cause of cancer deaths among Asian American and Pacific Islanders. Here in Minnesota, minority and low-income communities have more tobacco advertising than elsewhere. I believe in public health, that good health is a right, and that as a society, we can take steps to promote and advance health for all members of our society. For our communities of color and LGBT communities, please increase the tobacco tax and know that it is a good health policy. For the health of my community, I urge you to increase the tax on commercial tobacco. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Johnson. And were you speaking on behalf of the other two fellows here, or did they want to make brief comments?
I was not. They'll be up to have their own.
All right. Thank you. We just need to keep moving along. Thank you. Please come up to the testimony stand, Jonathan. And if Gloria, if you could get ready too, that would be great.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair and the committee. My name is Dr. Jonathan Rhodes. I'm a chemical engineer with 3M Company. I'm also a community researcher and community organizer for the past 20 years in the African American and African immigrant communities. I have 4 children and 5 grandchildren, and I mention them because I am concerned about the growing use of tobacco among the youth in our communities. The data shows that 16% of Minnesotans smoke, which is above the national average. But for the past 3 years, we have conducted our own research in our communities, and our data shows that over 45% of young people between 18 and 30 smoke on a regular basis within our communities. The tobacco companies cannot grow unless they reach young people now and have them smoking for the next 30 to 40 years. Tobacco-related illness affects African-American people disproportionately. As mentioned earlier, 40% of African men and women are more likely to die from cancer or lung-related diseases than whites. In addition, it costs us per capita 2 to 3 times more in health costs for tobacco-related illnesses. So I would like to be brief. So on behalf of our communities and our children, I would love to leave a healthy tomorrow for my children and grandchildren. I urge you to consider this bill and make it pass. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Kazanakli? Hope I'm not mispronouncing that too badly.
Well, my name is Gloria Liliana Kazanakli. I am from Colombia. I'm proud of saying that Minnesota is now my home. I agree that a tobacco tax will prevent our children from becoming addicted to tobacco and improve the health of our communities now. What I want to address is the wealth of our communities. As you know, our targeted communities are from lower incomes. You will hear that the tax is regressive and it hurts members of minority communities and lower income individuals. It is true that minority communities have lower income and lower income people smoke at higher rates. However, I see firsthand how our communities suffer disproportionately from the consequences of commercial tobacco use, including loss of health and even loss of life. Diseases from commercial tobacco use, such as heart disease, cancer, stroke, lower respiratory disease, are the leading causes for death of American Indians in Minnesota. And lung cancer is the leading cause of cancer deaths among Latinos and Asian Americans and Pacific Islanders. It's the burden of tobacco-related disease that is regressive. One simple way to help correct these problems is to increase Minnesota's commercial tobacco tax. Higher tobacco taxes will benefit rather than harm our communities. It is the best way to reduce smoking, with lower income and diverse population standing to benefit the most. Thank you for your consideration today.
Thank you. Next we have Ms. Kenny, and we'll need to keep moving because we do have to allow the other side to present as well.
Good afternoon. Thank you, Madam Chair, and members of the committee for letting me speak to you today. My name is Debbie Kenny. I'm from St. Paul. I'm a volunteer for the American Cancer Society Cancer Action Network. I'm here today to speak in favor of House File 91 to raise the price of tobacco in Minnesota. My big brother Nick was 10 years older than I am. We grew up in a small Ohio town where he was a little league star, a popular student, and when he turned 18, he joined the Navy. He loved golf and NASCAR, but more than that, he was a proud and loving father, grandfather to 4, uncle, devoted partner, and a hard worker. He was also a lifelong smoker. He struggled with smoking his whole life, trying many times to shake this awful addiction. When Nick was a young man, we didn't realize the dangers of smoking. By the time he knew better, he was already hooked. In January 2011, 2 days before his 68th birthday, he was diagnosed with stage 4 lung cancer with liver metastases. He had less than a 5% chance of survival and was given 4 to 6 months to live. Over the next few months, we watched my brother go from a bronzed, rugged, wise-cracking, macho guy to a weak, bald, confused old man. Cancer deaths are never easy, and death from lung cancer is particularly hard with the coughing, shortness of breath, struggle to take a deep breath and get enough air. Metastases can cause seizures and brain damage, and my brother became disoriented and couldn't be left alone. On a beautiful spring day in May 2011, I held my big brother while he gasped his last breath. He didn't know the effects of tobacco when he started smoking. He didn't know how hard it would be to quit. He didn't know the effect it would have on his kids or his grandkids or his sister or his mother, but you do. You know what tobacco does to a person and their family. Cancer is a monster, and I will do everything I can to prevent people from suffering from it. Tobacco use is a factor in 1/3 of deaths and nearly all lung cancer diagnoses. I am sure my brother would have lived many more happy years had the expense of smoking become too high and he was successful in his efforts to quit. As a sister, a mother, a grandmother, I beg you to move this legislation forward and make Minnesota a leader in discouraging young people from starting to smoke by making the price of tobacco too expensive for kids. Nick never wanted his children to smoke, and they don't. And I know he would support any efforts to keep his and all kids from picking up this terrible addiction. No battle with a tobacco addiction, no increased health care costs, no struggling for a single breath, a new generation of tobacco-free families. Can you imagine? We can do it. We have the answers. We know that if we make tobacco more expensive, kids won't buy it. The evidence shows that over and over again. Now the choice is in your hands. Do you choose to protect kids? We can't help my brother. It's too late. He's gone. But his grandchildren and my granddaughter, they're worth fighting for. I urge you to support House File 91, and I thank Representative Lucheski for her authorship. And I thank you for the opportunity to speak with you today.
Thank you, Ms. Kenny. We have one more proponent who's requested to speak, Kim Crockett from the Center for the American Experiment, and then we will start hearing from the opposition. Thank you. All right. Thank you, members, for listening respectfully when we have so many people want to be heard. Tom Bryant, would you please come forward to offer your testimony?
Madam Chair, could I receive assistance in just passing out one handout?
Absolutely. Our pages will be glad to help with that.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Tom Bryant, and I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Wholesale Marketers Association. That's a trade association of tobacco and cigarette wholesalers in the state. I'm here to testify in opposition to House File Number 91. There are two serious concerns that we have with House File Number 91. First, that family-owned wholesale businesses and retail stores will experience significant sales declines, especially near bordering states, as a result of the tax increases. Due to consumers traveling cross-border, black market operations, and then buying other tobacco products over the internet. And second, that 2/3 of the states that raised cigarette taxes over the past 3 fiscal years have missed their projected revenue targets significantly, and that's the chart that I'm handing out to you. Back to my first point about sales declines and consumers going cross-border. Based on current cigarette tax rates in our neighboring states, a carton of cigarettes will cost $23.90 less in North Dakota than in Minnesota. $13 less in South Dakota, $14.70 less in Iowa, and $3.10 less in Wisconsin. This tax savings will be a powerful incentive for adults who purchase cigarettes to drive a short distance from around the state and in cities like Pipestone, Moorhead, Albert Lea, and Winona for savings on each carton of cigarettes that they buy. But the savings on other tobacco products are even more extreme. There's a lot of talk about cigarettes, but don't forget the impact on cigars, pipe tobacco, and other products. This is a box of Romeo and Julieta Churchill cigars. It's sold around the state. The current retail price in a store is the suggested $299 for these 27 cigars. When you add on $20.56 in sales tax, that box costs you $319.56. That includes $86.80 in tobacco taxes at the current 70% rate. Under the bill, if you go to 95% tax rate on the wholesale cost, the retail price, including sales tax, goes to $362.30. Of that, $117.80 is the tobacco tax. I went on the internet yesterday. You can buy that same identical box of cigars from FamousSmokes.com for $125.99. No excise taxes, no sales tax, and free shipping. Under the current bill, you could literally buy almost three of these boxes over the internet for the price of one here under the tax increases under House File Number 91. Those tax increases on cigarettes and other tobacco products are going to result in devastating sales declines for small family-owned businesses here in the state. My other point regards the projected revenue that House File 91 is expected to bring into the state. This is a reference guide. It's called the Tax Burden on Tobacco. It is a historical compilation of all cigarette and tobacco tax rates and collections as reported by departments of revenue dating back to the 1950s. The chart I handed out to you lists 18 state tax increases on cigarettes enacted over the past three fiscal years and the shortfalls that those states incurred from that tax increase. That chart is based on revenue projections issued by departments of revenue and the actual amount of cigarette taxes collected as listed in the Tax Burden on Tobacco book. If you look at the chart, in particular Wisconsin, because I know that is a good comparison here, they did two tax increases in the past 3 years. On January 1st of 2008, they raised taxes by $1 per pack. They missed their projected Department of Revenue estimate by $131 million. 18 months later, they raised it by another 75 cents per pack and missed that projected revenue by $60 million, for a total of $191 million less than what they thought they would get over that two-year time period. I have the greatest respect for our Department of Revenue. I work with them, and I do respect their revenue analysis. But the message to take away from this empirical data is this, that as you consider this bill and the tax increases it includes, consider the possible significant shortfall in revenue that may occur over the projected revenue under this bill. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. And members, the Minnesota Grocers Association has provided a letter to us in lieu of testimony. And so we will next hear from Monty Williams. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Williams.
Madam Chairman, members, excuse me. Thank you for the opportunity to speak today. Please forgive me if I sound a little hoarse after I left here last week. I got really sick, so I'm not sure if that's a sign or whatever.
Cause and effect.
Good point. But despite it all, I came back. My name is Monty Williams, and I'm here today offering testimony on behalf of Altria, which is the and its affiliates, Philip Morris USA, John Middleton Cigars, and U.S. Smokeless Tobacco, on House File 91. My comments and opinions are based on a 30-year career with the California State Board of Equalization, where I was chief of excise taxes and chief of criminal investigations. I spent over 20 years of my state career in tobacco tax administration. I was also chairman of the Federation of Tobacco Administrators Tobacco Tax Section, and I served on their executive committee. Since leaving government, my job, or basically my company, basically does nothing but tobacco-related issues. And I'm here to address some of the parts of this bill that we believe that goes into some long-needed reforms in the tobacco tax area. Some of them we agree with, some of them we don't. And I'd like to go through them one by one as quickly as possible. The MPM fee portion of the bill. As you know, back when Minnesota settled with the tobacco companies, the legislature then instituted a fee on companies that did not settle. This fee was originally set at 35 cents a pack and remains at that rate today. It was based on a competitive issue, meaning the settling companies' products would cost more to sell than the non-settling companies. So in order to address that, the legislature implemented the fee. And we agree with that. The fee, however, has not changed, and this bill raises it to 50 cents. We agree with that and think it could even go to 55 cents and still be within the Supreme Court case that the legislation went through. So on that issue, we are wholly in support of increasing the fee. On little cigars, and my comments here will also be relative to the next bill on your agenda, House File 284. We support the equalization of little cigars and taxing them like cigarettes. We believe it's an advantage that they have in the marketplace that shouldn't exist. And the products we're talking about are this is little cigars, this is cigarettes. They look exactly the same. They're built the same. And we think they should be taxed like cigarettes also at the same rate. Little cigars are a separate class of tobacco, but they have attributes of cigarettes. They have filters, they have the same shape, and they come in 20 packs. The companies I represent do not make any of those products, but those products do compete with products they do make. Historically, there's been a state and federal advantage with these products because of the tax systems. As other tobacco products, they get taxed less than cigarettes. This caused a large growth in this area, caused lower revenues for the state and federal government, and there's no public policy benefit for that. Things changed in April when the federal government tried to change their law so cigarettes would pay the same rate as little cigars or cigarettes do. However, the problem was the way they wrote the legislation, it didn't actually do what they accomplished, and I'll discuss that a little bit later. They used the same definition that's in the bill that we're looking at here, in parts anyway, which deals with a subjective analysis of what the product looks like, how it might be sold, how it might be marketed to consumers, rather than an objective view of it. This same language has been used by the federal government, I said, in many states. Currently in Illinois, they had a bill that was similar to this, not exactly the same, but similar in its objectiveness, and it's under injunction. New York State implemented this exact same language and had to change it a couple of years later because they found it to be unenforceable. And the definition goes under this bill goes under the definition of a cigarette, which can cause some different problems. Because of the weight of these little cigars, they would be taxed under the current bill at double the rate of a cigarette, not the same rate as a cigarette. There could also be some issues with the MPM fee in your settlement and some fire safe issues for these products, too. All of those things combined, we believe it should be defined separately and put outside of the definition of cigarettes and taxed the same as a cigarette, not at twice the rate. We would propose that you focus on the features of the products rather than a description of the products. And the features of these products that make them similar to a cigarette is the filter and the wrapper. If the definition focuses on an acetate type or similar filter and the wrapper, you then move away from all the subjective features of the current definition, and it will get you where you want. And let me explain. When the federal government changed their law, they used the same descriptive definition, but they used 3 pounds per thousand. What the manufacturers of little cigars did was they changed the weight of their product from 3,000 per less to about 3.11. They added a little whatever. So then they became big cigars for federal purposes. So the definition, the subjective part of the definition, was never tested under the federal law because they got out of the whole thing just by the weight of their products. So if you focus on just a weight and this subjective description, I believe that the law will not be enforceable and you will not get to where you want to be. I'd like to now talk about the other tobacco products portion of this bill. It raises the rate from 70%, actually 35 to 95, but with the health impact fee, it's really 70 to 95, and establishes a minimum tax. We support modifying this category to go to a weight-based type system for moist smokeless products. We believe that the system that's in place now, the ad valorem, doesn't get you what you need to get and has problems in the market because the marketplace has changed substantially. When this bill was passed, the moist smokeless, which accounts for over 60% of your other tobacco products, the little cans of Skoal, Copenhagen, and all the other products, all sold at the same price. However, in 2005, 17% of your market here was these discount products, which were introduced in early 2001. Today, 50% of your market is these discount products. That means your average price per can in 2005 was $1.76. Your average tax per can now is $1.37. So because you attach your tax to the price of the product and the average price of the product is dropping, your tax revenue goes along with it. Proponents say ad valorem catches all the price increases. Well, that's great, except that prices don't just go up, they go down also. For example, when Altria bought U.S. smokeless tobacco, they dropped the price of Skoal Copenhagen and their products from $301 at wholesale to $239. And the other companies followed suit immediately thereafter. This one price drop cost the state of Minnesota $3 million. In that one year simply because of the way they price their products. Other people will say that you don't want to go to weight-based because they're going to market lightweight products. Our answer to that is you put a floor in, tax everything at 1.2 ounces. That way the lightweight product issue is gone. 22 states have converted from an ad valorem system to a weight-based system over the last few years. Your proposed rate is extremely high. If left as it is, it will just generate more downward trading in the market, taking your taxes with it. However, your floor that you have in here is actually higher than the tax rate would be on the product, so there's some problems with that floor, too. The ad valorem system doesn't work anymore and hasn't for a number of years. We urge you to change for a more stable system, which is weight-based. You'll get more revenue, it's better tax policy, and it will also not allow discount products to sell at a cheaper price simply based on your tax system. Excise taxes are consumer consumption taxes and should be reflected that. Your sales tax picks up the price difference. Now, under the cigarette portion of this bill, a lot's been said about the amount of the rate that it'll go up, and that's significant. Having been in tax administration for a number of years and chasing people around that didn't pay the tax, I can tell you this is a huge increase and will cause more problems than you probably can imagine. It's already been brought up that the revenues will fall short. I won't go into that again, but it's true that 18 states that did this did not get what they thought. Minnesota's tax-paid sales of products have decreased over the last 10 years about 6%. So you're tying a tax revenue source to a decreasing revenue stream. The other problem that's been brought up is the illicit trade. John DeAngelo of ATF stated that there's no doubt that there's a direct relationship between the increase in the state tax and the increase in illegal trafficking. And you will be significantly higher than all the surrounding states, particularly North Dakota. And just a couple of factoids for you. The trunk of a Ford Taurus, will hold enough cigarettes bought in North Dakota that are brought into Minnesota. It's worth over $11,000 in tax value that they can sell. A 26-foot U-Haul truck will be nearly $1 million in tax revenue, and that's if they pay all the taxes in North Dakota when they buy the product. That's a lot of money and a lot of incentive to people that want to try to skirt the system and avoid the taxes. And I can tell you, being from California, where the tax is only 87 cents at this point on a pack of cigarettes, we were up to $300 million a year in lost revenue at one point due to smuggling and counterfeiting. So this is a significant amount of money, the tax increase you're talking about here, and will bring in those issues, not just the people going across the borders, but you could bring in other problems along with it. It also works against all your retailers. About 40% of their business comes from cigarettes, the one who sell it. You currently get $322 million a year in cigarette revenue. You get about $170 million a year in settlement payments. An adult consumer already pays $1,200 a year annually in taxes in Minnesota. That will go up to almost $1,800 under this proposal. It is regressive, it impacts lower people, and the economy and the incomes of people simply don't support this. For this reason, we do not think that this is the time to increase cigarettes, especially by this kind of a rate. In summary, we believe that if you institute the reform parts, the NPM fee, change your method of taxing other tobacco products, and little cigar equalization, it'll bring in over $26 million in the biennium. We request that you do that first and then look and see what happens before you look at these types of draconian tax increases on cigarettes alone that may or may not get you anywhere near the revenue you think and could bring you problems you're not expecting. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Williams. And we have one last testifier, and then we'll be able to start discussion on the bill, and that is Kim Crockett. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm Kim Crockett. I'm the COO and General Counsel at Center of the American Experiment and Minnesota Free Market Institute. We're a 501c3 dedicated to building a culture of prosperity here in Minnesota. I'll try hard not to repeat things that have already been said so as to speed things up. Bottom line summary from me is that the state tax on cigarettes proposed both by Governor Dayton and under House File 91 would essentially prohibit smoking by price, making smoking de facto illegal. We already learned the hard way with de jure prohibition against alcohol that free people will find a way to consume prohibited products. And more importantly, the state will pay a high price in increased crime without achieving the benefits it seeks. I have met a lot of wonderful people in the audience today. My testimony will not address how best to stop teens from becoming addicted smokers, though I agree that this is a very, very worthy goal. But it's not clear to me what role the state should play. I'm very moved by the testimony I've heard. I started smoking as a teen because my parents smoked. Quitting as an adult was the hardest and best thing I have ever done. But I must note that we are a free people who must make choices, and we must live with the consequences of those choices, which include things such as my father's death from cancer. Before you exercise your considerable power, please use common sense to ask whether there is a better way to achieve these laudable goals that we've heard about today consistent with a free society while avoiding terrible unintended consequences. When Governor Dayton proposed the cigarette tax hike, I turned to my colleagues in the State Policy Network at the Mackinac Center in Michigan because they've been modeling the impact of these taxes for years. We wanted to properly analyze the impact here in Minnesota. Now, states usually cite two major reasons for raising cigarette taxes. One is to decrease smoking, and it sounds to me like that's the governor's goal and that's the goal of House File 91. But, you know, there's always revenue increases that are cited as well. These two goals can sometimes conflict, but the inelastic nature of the cigarette market often allows you as policymakers to achieve both aims at the same time, getting modest smoking reductions accompanied by a modest increase in tax revenue. But at some point you raise the price of cigarettes to the point where you don't get the inelasticity of it breaks. And we've seen that in many states who raised their cigarette taxes in recent years. And I won't go through the studies they've been cited today. I have other ones that I will get to your committee. Our big takeaway is that the increases lead to a significant increase in smuggling. And there's two different kinds. Casual smuggling by regular folks where you go to another state, perhaps an Indian reservation or another country even, to get cigarettes and other tobacco products. And then there's the one that really concerns me the most, and that's commercial smuggling, where you have large-scale operators buying cigarettes in bulk and bringing them into Minnesota. The smuggling undermines both the revenue and health goals of higher cigarette taxes while producing significant unintended consequences for Minnesota. Right now, under the Mackinac Center modeling, they say that about 20% of the cigarettes that are consumed here in Minnesota were smuggled in either casually or through commercial smuggling. If you raise, we ran the model under Governor Dayton's proposed 94-cent increase and found that the smuggling rate would leap to about 30%. And I didn't model the House File 91, but I'm happy to do that if you'd like me to. About half of that 30% would be directly attributable to casual smuggling. Now, this is an important number because it reminds us that any post-tax hike decline that you would see in legal paid sales, you have to kind of take that with a grain of salt, because the declines are not necessarily the function of people quitting smoking. They just are avoiding a legal cigarette purchase. Smuggling is not the only unintended consequence of high cigarette taxes. It can also lead to other types of violence in Minnesota against people, police, and property. And again, I have a history of that for you. I can submit it to the committee. The regressive nature of the tax is well known to you, and again, I won't repeat the testimony that's already been given today. In conclusion, I would say that we don't doubt that a tax hike increase would possibly prevent some teens who are price sensitive from starting smoking. And again, I think that's a laudable goal. And you may even see people, you know, quit because it just gets too expensive. Personally, I would think we'd already reached that point long ago, but it's amazing to me, you know, people still smoke. I don't think you're going to get close to the numbers that you're looking for, and you definitely won't get any revenue. And to the extent that you're counting on that in your state budget, I think that that's important. I guess the thing that strikes me, as the big takeaway from my research is that we'll have a lot of bad guys coming into our state that we don't have here currently. And I would like to see that unintended consequence avoided. So I think that the cost of the tax increase greatly outweigh the benefits. Thank you very much for having me this afternoon.
Thank you, Ms. Crockett. And members and Representative Lencheski, I must apologize. I didn't notice that there was an author's amendment in our packet. And if you would like to move that amendment, I think we can adopt it to get the bill in the form that you'd like us to consider it.
Yes, I'd like to move the author's amendment, please, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Representative Lencheski moves the A2 amendment. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Thank you very much, members, and now we will have some opportunity for testimony. We'll still get to Representative Loon's bill for questions, and the first is from Representative Davids.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And is there a doctor in the House? Could we? I think the second one that testified was a doctor. If she could step up here for a second.
That would be, is Dr. Beckler here?
She had to leave. The first was the cardiologist. She had to leave.
Any other doctors around?
Here we go.
Okay. Well, first of all, while the gentleman's coming up, and to the author of the bill, you had mentioned the bill be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill. I'm thinking it has about three other stops I can think of that are very necessary, and this is why. Number one, health finance. It has to do the Academic Health Center. There's going to be a change of $3.94 million there. It certainly needs to go to health policy, medical education, research cost fund receives $3.9 million from the health impact fund, which is being replaced. And apparently, Representative Huntley would like to see this and higher ed because the health impact fund revenues also affect the university's academic health center to the tune of about $22.25 million. So I would think this bill would need to make some other stops.
Representative Lencheski.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, and I'm happy to talk to those chairs. None of them have asked me to do that, but of course I'd be happy to do that, and I'd be happy to look at where Governor Pawlenty's similar bill, what stops it made. So I think that's a good point, and it should go anywhere it needs to go.
One of the doctors had said that this bill is the single most effective way to curb smoking. Wouldn't banning tobacco do a better job, Doctor?
No, I don't.
Welcome. Would you just reintroduce yourself?
I'm Dr. Tom Scott. You're from Health Partners. I think there's some subtext there that unsaid that among the politically acceptable approaches to reducing tobacco consumption, raising the price is the most effective. I think that a total ban is simply not on the table and isn't, it wouldn't be acceptable to anybody in the community. And so I think that the unspoken is that of the politically acceptable or feasible approaches, that raising the price is the most effective way to control uptake of tobacco by youth.
So, Madam Chair, and to the doctor, you would not support banning tobacco?
Representative Lentesky.
Or to the doctor.
And I'm happy to give you my opinion on that.
So, I'm sorry.
Madam Chair, if I'd like your opinion, I'll ask for it.
I'm sorry, Representative David, was there a second question?
Yes, so, I mean, you don't support a ban.
I don't think a ban is politically feasible, and so I...
Well, you never know, doctor, until you take it off for a spin. I mean... And Madam Chair, two other things.
Representative
First,
Davids, and we have three other people and another bill on the agenda. So
well,
we will
nice.
Have more time to discuss this.
For legislators that live in districts such as I that border two different states, this bill is extremely problematic to the retailers. I guess that's more of a comment than anything. And this brings back memories. I have quite a few small towns in my district, and every time they would talk about the tobacco tax, I get a call from this one family, and they would yell at me and scream at me about, you can't raise these taxes, you can't do it. But they won't be calling me this time because they're all dead. So they're heavy smokers, and they're not here anymore. I think cigarettes are disgusting, and I would support a ban. Just get rid of them. Because we tinker around the edges all the time around here and get nothing done. Raising these prices will bring in smugglers, will bring in a lot of cigarettes from Wisconsin and Iowa, and you really accomplish absolutely nothing. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Next we have Representative Garofalo, and if we can keep our questions to the testifiers, because they're the ones who we won't be able to hear from afterwards in our later discussions.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just two quick questions. I think this maybe could be for staff or Representative Wincheski. The first question is, what is the status of federally and state the at-home kits where people get tobacco and they roll their own cigarettes? There used to be a tax preference for that, where that was exempt from taxes. Can you just update the committee on that quickly?
Mr. Michaels.
Madam Chair, Representative Garofalo, the federal government, as I understand it, put out, first of all, Congress enacted a law, and then the Treasury Department, the Alcohol, Tobacco, and whatever it is, division, put out guidance that essentially required the retailers that make those machines available. Basically, the business model was you sold them the loose tobacco and you rented the use of the machine. The new federal rules require them to collect the federal cigarette excise tax on the cigarettes that are made with those machines. So from what I understand from talking to folks at DOR, the people that were doing that have basically stopped doing it in Minnesota. Now, the question you raised, I think, is a separate one that I do not know the answer to. If there are consumer-sized machines, not the big ones that you would buy in a retail outlet, that has not been affected by this. The federal change only affects the retailers that actually rent the use of those machines. So if you could buy, you know, a size that's the size of a toaster oven or a microwave, and that's reasonable, then they would still have that tax preference. I don't know if that's feasible as a business matter or not.
And Madam Chair, the second question is on page 3 of the bill, as we amended it with the author's amendment, with the A2 amendment, either for staff or for the author of the bill, could you just please cover what Section 6, Subdivision 1A of Section 6 of the bill, as well as page 6, Section 13. If you could just explain to members of the committee what those two sections are. And that's the end of my questions. Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Yes.
If I may, Mr. Michael, I think, can walk through the indexing provision by the commissioner if we want to take that first, and I'll look at the second piece.
Thank you. Mr. Michaels.
Madam Chair, Representative Garofalo, what Section 6 of the bill does is it indexes the excise tax rate on cigarettes based on the Department of Revenue's annual determination of the increase in the average retail price of cigarettes in Minnesota, which they currently use to set the in-lieu sales tax rate. This would have them not only reset the in-lieu sales tax rate every year, but starting January 1, 2014, they would also increase or decrease the sale, the excise tax rate based on the change in the price of cigarettes overall in Minnesota. The other provision, the Section 13 that you referred to, basically directs the commissioner to, on July 1st, to reset the sales tax rate to reflect the fact that the bill, by imposing a $1.60 pack increase on cigarettes, is obviously going to immediately increase the price of cigarettes in Minnesota. And so therefore, if you had a regular sales tax, that would automatically, as the price goes up, you would collect additional revenues. Because we have this in-lieu tax, there would otherwise be a lag, and there'd be a six-month lag. So this basically says reset that right away.
Madam Chair, there's a reason why we got the best tax staff in the nation, isn't there? Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Garofalo, and I think we all appreciate having Mr. Michael on our staff. Members, we're going to take one more question before we go to Representative Loon's bill for witnesses, because we will have other opportunities to discuss the merits of the proposals. We're just going to be laying the bill over for possible consideration. I'm sorry, but we had so many witnesses we did want to hear. And that would be Representative Barrett, if you have a question to the witnesses today.
Sure. Thank you, Madam Chair. And I have a couple thoughts, a couple questions probably for Chair Lynchewski regarding the issue here. There's a lot of important issues, obviously, with one bill. It moves into many areas, as Chair Davids has mentioned. You know, we have the health policy of trying to prolong first use of alcohol, just like other bad things. We want to prolong use, so kids at some point will say it's not a good thing to do. We have addiction, and obviously this would be targeting those people who might be addicted currently to tobacco. We have the tax side of it and increasing taxes, and then what are we going to do with that money and whether that money will come in. I think that's an important point, since we have a sheet here that says that many states who have thought they were going to get money from this tax didn't actually get this money. I think locally we know that from the Viking Stadium we heard last week. You know, we thought we were going to get some money from the stadium and e-poll tabs. It's not coming in. So I think there are a lot of issues there. My question, though, is related to the regressive nature of the tax, and I'm so sympathetic to the lady who lost her father early on. I think that's just awful. I think many of us have similar stories. I have one. My dad died early on in my life from smoking. Smoked 2 to 3 packs a day. My mom did as well. She quit. And we grew up poor, very poor, you know, with 4 kids in a house, 800 square feet. I didn't have a bedroom until I was 10 years old, slept on the couch. So poor, didn't have money for cigarettes, yet we had cigarettes. So and didn't have money for a lot of things, but cigarettes, we you know, because of the addictive nature. So I'm wondering, I'm really sensitive to the regressive nature, given that people who smoke, a lot of them currently smoking, are addicted. It would have been probably, I'm calculating it, probably $2,000 out of our whole household income because my parents would not have quit. Because my parents would not have quit. They just wouldn't have. So the question I have probably is for staff, if they could just help me out. And I'm thinking of the tax incidence study, in which we look at taxes based on 10 deciles and how that tax compares to our income. How regressive is the current tax? And how much are we going to prolong or increase that regressivity if we pass this particular bill? Do we have an answer to that? Who's paying the tax currently? And what rate of income are the poor folks paying it compared to the... Is it staff or anyone could answer that question for me?
Mr. Michael?
Madam Chair, unfortunately I did not bring my copy of the incidence study along, but by memory... Yes, the cigarette excise tax and the tobacco taxes generally are like the second most regressive tax that we have, and so yes, they are borne very disproportionately relative to income by folks in the lower deciles, and it's in part compounded by I think the fact that smoking, as time has passed, as more people have quit, has become associated with income levels, so that there are more smoking rates are higher in the lower income deciles. That compounds the fact that the tax, by its nature, and there are only so many cigarettes you can smoke no matter how high your income is. So the net effect is that, yes, it's a very regressive tax.
Thank you, members. And
Madam Chair?
Representative Pepin?
This isn't a question. That's why I interrupted before we moved on to the next bill. This this bill, I believe, also affects Health and Human Services funding, and so I believe that it needs to go to the Health Finance Committee, because the health impact fee does fund other things. I've got a report from one sheeter from House Research that says the health impact fee revenues are deposited into a health impact fund and are transferred to the general fund after the Commissioner of Human Services certifies that state health programs have incurred tobacco-related costs equal to the fee.
Representative Pepin, actually Representative David made that point earlier, and Chair Lincheski is going to be checking with the other committees about the need for referral. Representative Lincheski.
Madam Chair, I wanted to make that motion, and I would like a roll call on it.
Representative Lincheski, we'll take the motion in a minute.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and if Representative Pepin wants to leave that motion on the table, I hope folks would vote it down. I mean, people know the practice in this committee is that other than author's amendments, we typically hear things and lay them over for possible inclusion, but we certainly can take that vote, and I would strongly encourage people to vote it down. I will tell you, so when we look at raising a revenue, let's say the income tax, we don't have the K-12 committee decide if they would like an income tax increase to fund the schools. When we raise any tax, we do not go send them off to the people who will spend the money. This is the committee that raises all the revenue for the entire state budget, and the tax bill doesn't go through those committees. But I think people are trying to make a point here. We also don't when we cut a tax, and we've certainly cut tax here too. I voted to cut income taxes, and we didn't send those to K-12 and health and the environment committee to say, are you okay with an income tax cut? So that would not be a typical thing that we would do. And I have done some further checking on Representative David's question about the Academic Health Center and others, and I am not making any changes in the bill on that. And so there's really no need for it to go to any of these places, but certainly willing to, encourage folks to vote no on that, but that would not be a typical thing you would see this committee do, whether we're raising or cutting taxes.
Representative Pepin.
Madam Chair, I guess my official motion would be I'd like to refer the House file as amended to HHS Finance without recommendation.
And are you including your roll call request? All right, then Representative Pepin has recommended that we refer this to Healthcare Finance, and the clerk will take the roll so that we can get to the second bill.
Lincheski?
No.
Loeffler?
No.
Davids?
Yes.
Anderson?
Yes.
Anzalez?
No.
Barrett?
Yes.
Benson?
No.
Carlson?
No.
Dabney?
No.
Drazkowski?
Yes.
Earhart?
No.
Garofalo?
No.
Hansen?
No.
Liebling?
No.
Lilly?
No.
Loon?
Yes.
Mack?
Yes.
Marquardt?
No.
Moline?
No.
Myra?
Yes.
Paymar?
No.
Pepin? Runbeck?
Yes.
Schoen?
No.
Simonson?
No.
Slocum? Zellers?
There being 16 nays and 9 ayes, the motion does not prevail. Thank you. Any concluding remarks, Representative Lencheski?
I won't say anything because I would love to respond to everything, but Representative Loon has a bill on the calendar, and I know this committee will discuss this further. But I just want to say thank you so much to everyone who came out to testify for the bill and against the bill. I think it was a very respectful discussion. I do think some of the opponents have raised a few issues that I am open to working on and seeing if we can get some change relating to border cities and, you know, the item on the weight base. So I just want to put that on the record there, and I thank you so much, everyone, for all your time, both for and against.
Thank you. And with that, the bill will be laid over for possible consideration. Representative Loon, thank you for your patience and to your witnesses. The next bill that we have, as Representative Loon joins us, is House File 284. Would you like to make a motion, and is there any amendments?
Thank you, ma'am. Yes, I would ask for consideration of House File 284. And I do have an author's amendment. It's the A3 amendment to get the bill in the shape I would like it. So I would move that amendment as well.
Thank you. Representative Loon moves the A3 amendment to put the bill in the proper order. Any questions? Otherwise, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. The motion is adopted.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. In the interest of time, I will be incredibly brief. This committee, and we may have a couple of new members, but has heard this bill in the past. Since I've been in the legislature, I've either co-authored or authored a bill like this. This is my third time around. Hopefully we'll be able to get some action on it this year. The essence of this legislation, everyone refers to it as the little cigar bill, but really more kind of a tobacco tax uniformity bill in my mind. In 2009, the federal government banned flavored cigarettes. So cigarettes before that time were allowed to be made with maybe fruit or candy flavors. And the federal government banned that, but other tobacco products are still able to be sold with those flavorings in them. And we've seen where products that are very similar to cigarettes, if you look at them and their composition and that, extremely similar to cigarettes, but they are categorized as other tobacco products, or we call them little cigars. They do have fruit flavors in them, and they are under a different type of taxing structure, so they fall outside of how we tax cigarettes, even though they are sold in packs. And we do have some examples. They come in everything from grape to strawberry to chocolate flavors, and they sell for substantially less than the pack of a cigarette because of the difference in the tax structure that they are subject to. So my bill simply proposes that we address what I think is a loophole and a problem with conformity of very similar products in how we tax them, and do that primarily for the reason of discouraging youth from smoking. These products are becoming oftentimes the tobacco product of choice that youth will try if they decide to experiment with a tobacco product. Oftentimes the fruit flavors are something that's appealing because it masks in times the harsh flavor of tobacco, and again, because of their pricing structure and the tax is much less on these products, they are much more affordable. We've made some strides in trying to discourage youth from starting to smoke, but we still have thousands and thousands, something like 77,000 young people who will try to smoke and try these products and perhaps get hooked every year. And so I think this is a sensible way to try to resolve a tax conformity issue, as well as the, I think, overriding goal of trying to discourage youth from starting to smoke in the first place. So with that, I'll stand for any questions and allow our testifiers to provide their testimony.
Thank you. Our first testifier is Ms. Molinen.
Madam Chair and members, again, my name is Molly Moylanen, and I'm with Clearway. Again, I represent this great coalition of organizations that stand ready to support this bill, including the Cancer Society, the Heart Association, Blue Cross, Health Partners, Local Public Health, Mayo Clinic, and the list goes on and on. Just to keep it brief, the only difference between this so-called little cigar and a regular cigarette is there's a little bit of reconstituted tobacco in the paper, and therefore it allows it to get through the loophole in the cigarette statutes. And so what this does is just reclassify what these are, masquerading as cigarettes, sold to, marketed as, used by smokers as cigarettes. It's common sense solution. It's bipartisan supported. We've been working on this for a few years, and we just want to thank Representative Loon, Carolyn Chesky, and so many of you who have championed this and supported this in the past, and it's time to finish the job this year. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Mullen, for having brief remarks. I'm sorry that we have gotten to the time we're to adjourn, so we're just going to keep moving as fast as we can. And Ms. Kingsley, if you would like to give us just a few brief comments, that would be appreciated. Thank you. Welcome to the committee.
Hi, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Thank you. My name is Jenna Kingsley, and I am a 16-year-old junior at Virginia High School. And I'm here to represent Minnesota's youth. I got involved with the American Lung Association by volunteering through Iron Range Youth Action, which is a group that has about 500 students. And what my group and I did was we went to gas stations and grocery stores across the Iron Range, and we looked at what type of promoting and advertising big tobacco companies had in our area. I was completely stunned by what I found. Little cigars are insanely inexpensive. A pack of 20 is around $150, is $1.50, I'm so sorry. And that's so much more inexpensive compared to a pack of cigarettes, which is usually over $5. I see the influence on my community all the time. We have an alley across from my school, like not even 100 feet away, that's called Smoker's Alley, that has kids just go there at free periods and lunchtime, and school can't do anything because it's off school grounds, so it's, they can't stop them besides trying to get people caught there, and it's really not okay. And then there's kids who walk in to class all the time reeking of smoke after, and the person's locker right next to mine has pot cans full of chew spit, which is disgusting, and it's not okay that kids my age should even be able, that they go at this stuff, because it's the packaging, it looks like candy, like they showed you, and there's chocolate and good flavors and stuff like that, and it's disgusting that it's so easy for us. It's like gas, you know what I mean? Like, when gas prices go up, my friends and I find ways to do things that are, like, you know, we stay home and we play games or we do something else, and because it's too expensive for us to have to go buy the gas to go other places. So if we're raising the tax, it's going to make it so we don't want to buy this stuff anymore. It's going to stop us from wanting to get any of this stuff, because we're not going to waste our money on something that's pointless. So,
thank you very much for your testimony, for coming to the Twin Cities to give it. Aura Hoax is the last name I have for testimony on this. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Hotep, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Aura Hoax. As you've heard from others on this afternoon, cheap candy-flavored little cigars lure our children into smoking. In my community, tobacco use by African-American high school students is on the rise, and these little cigars are popular with our youth. It is alarming that the only ethnic group to show an increase in tobacco use, including little cigars, is within the African American youth population. I would ask, why is this? I believe it's the disproportionately targeted marketing of candy-flavored little cigars in my community. I see it in my neighborhood convenience and corner stores. The product advertising plasters the exteriors of stores in plain sight of our children who frequent these local businesses to purchase snacks and goodies. What we don't need is more of these cheap flavored tobacco products to addict our youth. As most of you are aware, African Americans already have the highest lung cancer and mortality rates. Now, in Minnesota, African American men and women are 30 to 40% more likely to die of lung cancer than Caucasians. More than one-fourth of Minnesota high school students have reported that they have tried flavored cigars, cigarillos, or little cigars at some point in their young life. So today, I urge you to take a stand and reclassify little cigars to what they really are, cigarettes. An increase in the price is the most effective way to reduce youth smoking and protect all our youth. I appreciate this opportunity to speak with you briefly about such an urgent matter. Our children, Asante Sana, and God bless you.
Thank you, Ms. Hoax, for being here. We are past our time, but I did want to recognize at least a couple members, if I could briefly, who have asked to speak. Representative Paymar, did you want to make a comment?
My comments were on the other bill, so
okay.
So I'll have to wait.
Thank you.
But I do want to thank, if I can, the job creators like Philip Morris and R.J. Reynolds for providing all that additional money for the tobacco lobbyists who will be lobbying against the Loon bill and the Lencheski bill. That also helps them out.
Thank you. And Representative Loon, I need to call, too, to see if there's anyone who'd like to testify in opposition. Welcome to the committee.
Madam Chair, my name is Tom Bryant from the Minnesota Wholesale Marketers Association. Several brief comments on this bill. First, the wholesalers I represent don't perceive a problem in collecting and remitting the 70% tax on little cigars. But this bill would require all of them to be stamped with the cigarette tax stamp as well, because it defines them as cigars. Wholesalers use a high-speed cigarette stamping machine to put the cigarette stamp on each pack of cigarettes. It stamps about 30,000 or more packs of cigarettes an hour. It slides the carton through, opens the top, stamps all 10 at once, closes the flap, glues it, and reseals it in 1.2 seconds. A lot of the little cigars and small cigars that would be captured under this bill cannot be stamped by a cigarette stamping machine. They're not the right size. The machines adjust slightly for height of a package, but not depth or width. These are two examples. These are small cigars, not little cigars. There's three categories of cigars in the industry. Little, like the size of a cigarette package. Small, like these. This is a package of 16. Or these small cigarillos, a package of 6. These won't fit through a cigarette stamping machine. We can't stamp those. In fact, this package is so thin, the stamp is wider than the package, it won't fit. What the wholesalers would have to do is revert back to the old-fashioned way, an iron hand stamp, to put one stamp on each package at a time. Someone proficient in doing that can stamp about 300 to 350 packages an hour. Iowa passed the same bill. They required stamps on little cigar packages, all of them. The wholesalers there that are also members of the Minnesota group have stopped stamping these kind of products. There's about 200 little cigar products and small cigar products on the market. Half cannot be stamped with a cigarette stamping machine. They have stopped stamping those. They have stopped selling those. So it's in effect a de facto prohibition on the sale of about 50% of your little and small cigar products throughout the state. That means the wholesalers lose sales, retailers lose sales, and the state loses business. Also, these products would have to comply with the fire safe cigarette paper law under Minnesota statutes, where you have special paper to slow the burn rate so it doesn't start fires. I don't know if there's a paper that could be used for little cigar, because little cigar paper is constituted with two-thirds tobacco, not just a white paper like cigarettes. So for those reasons, we ask you not to proceed with the bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Bryant. And with that, are there any concluding remarks? And I appreciate everyone's patience with us going over.
Thank you, Representative Loon. Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. No, I think in the interest of time, I'm certain, you know, this discussion will continue if the late over bill is taken up again, either on its own or in fashion. So I just appreciate the committee's time today.
Thank you, Representative Loon, and members, for your patience today. And with that, we are adjourned.